This is Christy Walters.
And I'm Jeff Bajorek. Together, we host the Why and the Buy podcast, and we are pumped to be a part of the Sell or Die podcast network.
The Why and the Buy is a show about tackling sales and leadership challenges that salespeople and small business owners face every single day.
While we have a lot of fun doing it. I'm a dad. I'd like to think I'm not a terrible dad, but I'm a dad, and I make bad jokes.
I love it. That's what happens when you start a podcast.
If you like making a lot of money and being super successful, then sure, I suppose.
Jeff and I have been there. We've lived through it, and we're here to share the lessons we've learned. So subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And remember, when you know your why.
Your hows and your whats get much better. We'll talk to you again real soon.
And mic drop.
In cold calling for women, which I use to this day, is the performance model. Because I actually don't know anything about sports either, believe it or not. And my metaphor was dancing because I was a dancer. First, you warm up. Because when you're dancing or playing sports, if you don't warm up, you're going to hurt yourself.
Position one.
So the first thing you...
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die. This is America. This is the global sales and personal development podcast that will light your fire and fill your wallet. I'm joined today by...
I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and CEO of Sales in a New York Minute. Hey, everyone.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote The Little Red Book of Selling, and we are experiencing a slight downturn in temperature.
Yes, we are. Well, actually, we're traveling, and I've been looking at the weather to where we're going.
And it's freezing.
It's 30 and 40 degrees.
So let's talk about cold calling. And let's try to do it in a way that warms the, I was going to say cockles, but that might be a bad word in podcast land. But it warms the very little portions of your heart, because if you get through on a cold call, you can win. And actually, our guest today, Wendy Weiss, is an exceptional cold calling person. And today, we're going to do things a little bit differently. I should inform the diehards. Almost 10 years ago, I interviewed today's guest for a program called Selling Power Live. And the guest was Wendy Weiss. She was a cold calling expert and a sales consultant. And we talked about prospecting, following up, and the world of sales as we knew it in 2005.
And so here's the thing. That was more than 10 years ago. And so we decided, well... Our producer, Doug, decided.
10 years ago, I was, I think, 5 years old.
I thought you were 7, but go ahead.
So we decided it was time to follow up and follow through with Wendy and find out where she feels cold calling is today. And we wanted to talk to her about things specifically that have changed over the last decade, like how the internet has changed everything about our profession and what we need to be focused on now.
But first, we're going to play, I think probably the real deal should be, let's play that original interview, and then let's talk about what happened in that, you know, how has the world changed in cold calling. So I'm going to be giving my view, Jen's going to be giving her view, and Wendy Weiss is going to be giving her view about how the cold call has changed and how social media has changed that process. Or if you're listening from Canada, that process.
It's like a time machine. We're going back in sales time. Do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah, we lost the sound bite on that. Do we have a go back in time one? We
don't? Oh, man. Oh. All right, let's get to it. It's time for the 2005 Wendy Weiss interview.
Follow-up is an area where salespeople can genuinely shine and put distance between themselves and the competition. In the next hour or so, we're going to be learning a lot about follow-up from salespeople who follow up and follow through every day. But I wanted to first speak with an expert on follow-up. Her name is Wendy Weiss.
Wendy's the author of the recently released Cold Calling College and the book Cold Calling for Women, which is much different than cold calling for men, as Wendy can elaborate on very eloquently. Wendy's a sales trainer and a sales coach that helps entrepreneurs, business owners, and sales professionals gain confidence, reach more prospects, close more sales, and as a net result of that, make more money. Wendy, how are things in, you're in New York, right?
I am in New York.
The friendly capital of the world?
Well, I think so. I like to think so. We're very friendly here in New York.
Yeah.
I like our reputation.
The reputation precedes you, Wendy. And actually, I grew up cold calling in New York City. Many people may not know, but I was in the garment business for an extended period of time, and I actually sold leisure furniture in New York City to major department stores. So I cut my sales teeth in New York City when you could actually make a cold call. It's very tough now.
You can still do it, though.
Yeah, but it's tough to get into most major buildings. I just went to a half a dozen publishers for my next book, and I could not get through the gate police there to even get into an elevator.
Right, right. You need to show ID.
It's unbelievable.
Pass through. Yeah, it is. Pass through the metal detectors. Even if you, because I always call in advance and I set up my appointments by phone, but even once you're there and you have an appointment, you need to go through that.
Yeah, I found that some people will call down and put my name on a list, mm-hmm. while others need to be called.
Yeah.
They have different procedures in different buildings, but
right.
there's 21st century cold calling is much different than 20th century cold calling.
That's right.
When I cold called in the 70s and the 80s, I could walk in any building, go in any elevator, go up to any floor, and walk in anybody's office. And I always loved the line, and I knew I was, you know, I got through something when some guy would look up at me and go, "How'd you get in here?" That was my favorite response to any kind of cold call that I did.
And I got the same response when I first started my business and started cold calling, because I built my business from cold calling. And those prospects would look at me and they'd say, "How'd you get here? I never meet with anybody."
Well, here's the deal. This morning, I want to talk about follow-up. Mm-hmm. But follow-up is probably the single most strategic element in cold calling.
Yes.
It's easy to get in the door the first time. It's very difficult to gain interest. And then once you gain the interest, which is probably 3 out of 100, then you have to be able to make the follow-up in order to ensure the fact that you make some kind of an appointment.
Yes.
Very few cold calls result in a sale. They usually result in, "I'm going to see this person again." So
yes.
Why is follow-up important to you? How did you begin to learn about the follow-up process?
Well, follow-up is selling. It's very few sales are made on that initial contact. And so the entire sales process is about following up, staying in touch, maintaining that interest, and motivating that prospect to take action. And that's what follow-up is about.
Well, as an expert at cold calling, do you have some kind of strategy for following up?
Sure. First of all, you need to know where you are in your process, because a sale has a cycle and certain steps, and every sale passes through the same steps. You need to know where you are in your process, and you need to know the goal of your conversation with that prospect. And this is something I find to be fascinating. Many, many salespeople don't understand the goal of their call. And so that since they don't know what they want, they don't get what they want. You have to be very clear. When I hang up this phone, where do I want to be? What action do I want my prospect to take so that this sales process can continue? And once you know what the goal of your phone call is, you also need to understand your prospect, understand their hearts and minds and soul. What are their needs? What are their wants? What are their fears? You need to be prepared by writing a script. I know this is something most sales representatives don't like to do, but you need to have a script. You need to know how you're going to present yourself, how you're going to present whatever it is you're selling, how you're going to ask for what you want. And then, of course, the last step is you have to make the phone calls.
Well, let me ask you this. Suppose I made a phone call and I went out on my first appointment, a cold call appointment, and the guy said, well, I got to, you know, talk it over with a couple of people. What's the best strategy? I'm now at the point where the guy has told me he's got to follow up with a couple people. What do I do next?
Great question. And I'm going to take it back a step, because when you set up that initial appointment, first of all, you always want to be talking to the highest level person that you think is the decision maker. So that might be the head of the department. That might be the owner of the company, depending on whatever it is you're selling. You want the person that can sign off on what you're doing.
Okay.
So if you've already set that up, you're walking in the door to meet with a decision maker.
Right, and he says he's got to talk it over with a couple of people in his department.
Okay. So
and he'll get back to you.
Right. So then you say, based on what we've talked about so far, what is your feeling about this product, service,
okay,
what it is we've talked about?
Where
do you see this going? Get that person's agreement.
Okay.
Then try and set up a meeting. He has to talk with Fred and Joe. See if you can join into that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? When are you going to talk with Fred and Joe? Why don't we do this? I'd be happy to come back. Let's sit down. We'll kick it around. We'll talk it through. What's your calendar like?
Okay.
And try and set it up. I call this preempting the follow-up.
Okay.
Because if you can get it all done.
That's okay. Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. I would want to meet with every decision maker or every influencer.
Right.
Obviously, there's a million techniques that you could talk about now, but before I get into a meeting, I want to know who pulls the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And if I know that only one person in a company pulls the trigger.
Right.
And if I know that I'm meeting with the trigger puller, then he can pick a phone up and get Fred and Joe to come in his office right now.
You got it.
If he doesn't pull the trigger, he's got to go ask his daddy, which is a little bit more difficult to do.
Yeah.
Especially when his daddy may have an existing relationship with somebody else and it ain't you.
Yeah.
But you're correct in that you want the salesperson to complete the follow-up before he leaves the sales call.
Yeah.
So that he is prepared for the follow-up and not have to go back and chase voicemail, chase faxes, chase emails. That's a bunch of bull. That is a total amateur salesperson.
Yeah. You don't want to waste your time.
Right. If a salesperson leaves a meeting and hasn't already solidified the follow-up, they have wasted their time in that meeting.
Yep.
And they're going to waste even more time trying to get back to Mr. Jones, following up. Well, did you meet with him yet? What were they thinking? Well, can I come over again? I'll be your best friend if you'll just. It becomes literally a begging exercise rather than a selling exercise.
And you set that up by always going to the top. So many sales representatives go after the low-hanging fruit because they're seemingly more accessible
mm-hmm.
and seemingly nicer. However, I have found the higher level the people are, the nicer they are.
Well, and the easier they are to deal with.
And the easier they are to deal with because they have real power. And they can say yes or no.
So how many times should a person try to make a connect?
As many times as they need to get what they want.
Isn't there a point where the salesperson says, I think I'm being a pest here?
Well, first you want to prioritize your contact. And if you believe a contact is an A prospect, because I use A's, B's, and C's, and you believe that a prospect is an A prospect, you might fall back and regroup a bit. You might try something different. But you want to continue to stay in touch to get what you want.
Well, right? if you call somebody to follow up and they haven't returned your call and you leave a voicemail message, what do you do next?
I'm actually not a big believer in leaving a lot of voicemail messages.
No one from New York is.
Yeah.
But people live in other parts of the country and they actually do leave messages.
Uh-huh. And sometimes the messages are returned. You need to know that you're going to be someplace reachable when they return your phone call.
Right. Now I understand that, but suppose the guy hasn't returned your call. What do you do next?
Call him again.
To me, a non-response means that there's not enough of an urgency or there's not enough of an interest for that person to pick the phone up and call you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In other words, I get messages from people, and there's no reason for me to call them back. There's no value there for me. Is there any kind of value message that you leave? Is it always on the sale, or is it sometimes about the customer?
Lots of times it's about the customer. It's about the value that you can add. And I'm not suggesting that you call this same person over and over and over 25 times a day till you get them on the phone. But you want to continue to stay in touch. So what you thought is an A prospect who might not be returning your phone call, maybe they move down to being a B or a C, and you follow up with them in different ways.
Like, for example?
For example, mailers, an email newsletter. I know you have an email newsletter, Jeffrey. I do as well. It's called Opening Doors and Closing Sales. It goes out monthly to all of my contacts, mm-hmm. all of my prospects, to all of my clients, to all of my customers for my products and my books. It's a way of staying in touch every month, and it's easy, it's automated, and I don't have to think about it a lot.
But why would a customer, a prospect, go from an A to a B or a C just because they wouldn't call you back?
A prospect that won't talk to you is not really an A prospect anymore, in my opinion, after a period of time. By all other criteria, you may consider them to be an A prospect. If, however, you have called them repeatedly, and I'm saying 7, 8, 9 times, and have not had a response back, and the prospect is aware that you've called because you've left messages, that prospect is no longer an A prospect if they won't talk to you.
Okay, well, let's look at it this way. If a prospect, if I call somebody and I leave a message for them and they don't call me back, I have to examine what did I say to this person that caused them not to return my call.
Mm-hmm.
If I do it a second time and they don't call me back, I have to do the same examination.
Absolutely.
What was my message like? Was it stupid? And mm-hmm. typically the salesperson will blame the customer for not calling them back.
Mm-hmm.
What are they thinking? Mm-hmm. If somebody doesn't call you back, that's a report card. That's not an unreturned phone call. All it's saying is you didn't leave any kind of message that got me to call.
If you're going to leave a message, it needs to be scripted the same way you want to script your initial call. And that script has to include the answer to the question, why should I be interested,
mm-hmm.
from the prospect's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, lots of times sales people will leave the message, I'm calling to follow up. That's not a message that says anything. You need to have that reason in there that they should call you back.
What are some reasons? Can you pop off a couple reasons?
Possibly that you have information for them, that you have an answer for them, that you have something that's entirely outside the realm of the actual sale, but some value add that you want to communicate with them. There are a lot of possibilities along those lines.
Do you ever use humor in there?
And absolutely. If you can add humor, it always helps, unless all your friends tell you you're not funny.
Yeah,
then
well.
Don't add humor.
I left a message for a guy in the middle of December. I knew he was busy, and he didn't call me back. And I called him back again, and I said, I'm checking this list here of naughty people and nice people. You used to be on the nice list, but you didn't call me back. I've transferred you over to the naughty list. If you could, and the guy called me back in 3 minutes. He was howling.
Uh-huh. You know, Jeffrey.
But it takes guts to do that.
Oh, yeah. I have a letter that I use. I either email it or sometimes I send it via snail mail. And I actually talked about it in my last Selling Power Live interview. It's the Abducted by Aliens letter. And it goes something like this. Dear Jeffrey, I've been trying to reach you for some time now without any success.
and I've become quite concerned for your welfare. Have you been abducted by aliens? And then I go on in the body of the letter to explain why I was calling, and if I'm sending it by snail mail, I have a nice little card, return card, where they can check things off, help get me out of here. No, I've not been kidnapped by, I've not been abducted by aliens, but I'd love to speak with you. Please call me. And they fill in the time of the date. And it's a very silly, very funny letter. The full text of it is in Cold Calling for Women. And I get return phone calls 98-99% of the time with that letter. So that's kind of my last resort letter. If I've called someone a bunch of times and I really want to reach them and they're not getting back to me for whatever reason, I send them the abducted by aliens letter.
I had a guy one time who was trying to sell me on web design, and I wasn't really interested in what he had to say. It wasn't really very effective with me on the telephone. And he called a couple times, and I didn't return his call. I usually will return salespeople's calls, but I was busy. I just didn't do it. Mm-hmm. I get a letter in the mail that he had written, but he wrote it from his mom. Mm-hmm. And he said, "My son's been calling you, and you haven't returned his calls." She was like yelling at me. And it was just hysterical. And I had to call him back. Mm-hmm. I had to call this guy back.
Uh-huh.
I didn't buy from him, but you know, he got what he wanted. The essence of the follow-up is not to make the sale, it's to get to the next step in the sales cycle.
Yeah.
And most salespeople lose sight of that fact. Mm-hmm. Just get to the next step in the sales cycle.
Right, and that goes back to the whole question of knowing what your goal is and knowing where you are in your process and what's the goal of this next contact. And that, I know I said this earlier, but I'm going to return to it. I see that as one of the biggest issues with salespeople is that they simply don't know what their goals are in their sales process. Because when I'm working with clients and I'll say to them, "What's your goal here?" And I will get answers like, "To get them interested." And I'll say, "Well, to get them interested to do what?" And that's the step that sometimes is hard for people to take, but you want your prospect to take an action. What is it? What's your next step?
Psst, Jen.
What's up, Jeffrey?
I have a secret.
Tell me.
I have captured Napoleon Hill's foundational wisdom for the 21st century.
Amazing. Let's share that with the diehards.
For a limited time, you can download the first chapter of my new book, Truthful Living, before it's released on Amazon. These easy-to-implement real-world strategies for life, family, business, and your bottom line prove as energizing and inspiring today as they were 100 years ago.
Go get the first chapter of Truthful Living for free.
For free.
It's the foundation of Napoleon Hill's self-help legacy. His long-lost original notes, letters, and lectures, now compiled, edited, and annotated for the modern reader. Go to hillsfirstwritings.com and get that chapter for free. So that was pretty interesting. A lot has changed, and a lot has actually stayed the same.
Well, the obvious glaring things are that she's talking about having a script, so you have something to say, and some of people are still scripted. I use notes rather than scripts because it allows me to be a human being and not sound like I'm reading something. The ABC prospect process is old, like real old, like from the 30s and 40s. And I don't think that that's there anymore. I think that it's a matter of connecting. If you notice, social media is absent because the social media revolution didn't even start until 2007 or 8.
Well, she talked about mailers. I mean, you were, when you had that interview, you were on the verge of the social media revolution.
Right. We were right there. So, diehards, you can see that the process has changed, but you still need to get to a decision maker and you still need to make a sale.
Okay, so Wendy listened to the interview as well, and we are joined by her now, and this one actually has a little debate in it. So let's get to Wendy.
Spicy.
Take a listen.
So we listened to your episode.
Yes, we did.
And it was not about cold calling, but it was basically about once you get to the decision maker, what the hell do you do then? Because most people, when they get to a decision maker, are shocked. Like, oh, it worked.
Uh-huh.
How has cold calling changed over the past decade?
People answered their phones. It was easy to get them on the phone. And so the whole thing was just a lot easier. And people that didn't have a lot of skill or didn't have anything particularly compelling to say could actually do okay because they just kept calling people because they could reach them. You know, the model that most people used then and most people I think still think of today for cold calling is open up the phone book, call anyone, make hundreds of dials every day, say whatever comes into your head, wing it because you don't have a script or anything that prepares you, and go through the no's and the hang-ups until somebody says yes to you.
Which is about how many out of 100?
Well, not very many.
Even if you have a script, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. They have a script. How many out of 100?
If you dial the phone 100 times, on average, you can connect between 15 to maybe 25% of the time with the person you want to talk to. Now, depends on the market, certainly depends on the level you're calling. If you're calling the C-suite, you're going to connect less than if you're calling lower level executives. But somewhere in there, you're going to connect. We aim for a minimum of a 25% conversion of those conversations with those decision makers. 25% of them become first appointments.
So in 2005, one of the things you talked about on the interview with Jeffrey is that most salespeople have the wrong goal when they're making cold calls in the first place. Do you feel it's still the same now, or do you feel that people are realizing that it's not necessarily to get the sale, but it's more so to get that first meeting?
I think it's still exactly the same, that most people don't understand their goal. And people will often say to me, well, I don't want a cold call because I want to build relationships. And I'll say to them, huh? What? Because they don't understand. It's just an introduction. That's what the cold call is. You still have to build the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of times people will use language when they're speaking with a prospect that the prospect interprets as the salesperson wanting the prospect to make some sort of buying decision there and then. And maybe the salesperson doesn't mean to do that, but the language that they are using makes the prospect think, I have to make a buying decision over the phone in like 2 minutes and I'm not going to do that. And they don't. So the languaging, what you say is very important.
Yeah, but if they say, I'm not calling to sell you anything, I would hang up immediately.
Immediately. Immediately.
I'm proud to say that my name appears on a new book along with Napoleon Hill's name. The book is called Truthful Living, and it's yours for the clicking. It's not just a book. It's the very foundation of Napoleon Hill's self-help legacy. His long-lost original notes, letters, and lectures, now compiled, edited, and annotated for the modern reader.
In Truthful Living, Jeffrey has captured Hill's foundational wisdom for the 21st century. These easy-to-implement, real-world strategies for life, family, business, and the bottom line prove as energizing and inspiring today as they were nearly 100 years ago.
Go to Amazon, click on the link, own the book in any format you like, but read it, study it, and put it into your life.
So the metaphor that I used in Cold Calling for Women, which I use to this day, is the performance model. Because I actually don't know anything about sports either, believe it or not. And my metaphor was dancing because I was a dancer. First, you warm up. Because when you're dancing or playing sports, if you don't warm up, you're going to hurt yourself.
Position one.
So the first thing step one, yeah. Warm up, which means targeting, doing your due diligence, and then figuring out what you're going to say to them that's going to get their attention. That's step one. That's your warm-up. Step two, If you're a dancer, if you're a ballet dancer, you don't just run out on stage and start dancing. You've been rehearsing for months. So you practice. And when you practice, you get that automatic muscle memory. You know, it takes 10 years to train a ballet dancer. It doesn't take someone 10 years to learn how to do this, but they just have to practice it so they're comfortable and they know what to say when prospects ask questions or gatekeepers ask for information. So you practice. And then step three is that you actually perform, you execute, but you don't, what most people do is they just get on the phone. They just start making calls, but the performance model is you warm up, you rehearse, and then you make your calls, and that works much better.
So what's the future?
I think that people are going to, there's actually a resurgence in people using the phone. All the research shows that no matter where you find a lead, at some point you probably have to speak with that human being on the telephone.
Oh, sure.
Yep.
And especially if you're trying to sell something that's more complicated than the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And so the issue really, it's not about whether it's a cold call or it's a warm call. The real issue is the ability to communicate with another human being, get their attention, and then get their agreement to whatever the next step is. And so that's actually what I teach, is that communication skill. Because prospects don't think of themselves as warm.
Yeah, that's true. Do you find that there are less prospects because of the internet?
I don't think there are less prospects. Actually, the Rain Group did a study that came out at the beginning of the year. I'm sure you've both seen it. It was about prospecting. And one of the things they found was, and I forget the exact number, but it was something like 80% of buyers actually want to talk to salespeople fairly early in the buying process.
Yeah, I would call bullshit on that, and I'll tell you why. If you ask anybody in any audience, how many of you did internet research before you bought your last car? Now, that's a $50,000 buy, and every single hand will go up. When General Motors installs the buy now button, like Tesla did, I'll venture that 74% of the audience never talks to a salesperson again. Maybe they have a trade-in, but the bottom line is they know exactly what they want, and they can do Google research to find out exactly what it costs, and they can do the whole thing over the internet without talking to anybody.
I think it depends on the product you're buying. Like,
yeah,
we were looking at software.
About a $50,000 buy.
Yeah, we were looking at software to get yesterday. We were comparing three or four different programs, and all we wanted to do was talk to someone at each company to get answers, and we would Google the company name and phone number and get phone numbers. One company we called said, "Thank you for calling. Please check our internet site at www.whatever.com where we can answer your questions." Like, no, I just picked up the phone to call you. I don't want to go to the site. I want a real human being. So I think it depends on what you're buying.
It depends. I think you're right, Jennifer. I'm in agreement with you. It does depend on what you're buying. If it's a complete commodity sale, which sometimes a car is, then, yeah, you can click on the buy now button. And I'm not saying, and I don't think the Rain study said that people don't do research. But what it did say is that they want to talk to salespeople at some point, and it's usually fairly early.
So, Wendy, how do you help salespeople stand out when they're making cold calls so that they can win over the internet battle?
Well, they need to have something compelling to say. I mean, it really does start with targeting. You know, when I work with people, I will say to them, first thing, describe an ideal prospect. What are the parameters that make up an ideal prospect for you? And most of them can't do it. So we need some very concrete parameters about who we're targeting, because the answer is not everybody. And even if you're that insurance agent, if you're selling commercial insurance, then you're going after businesses, not consumers. It's, you know, it's that basic. So What's the target? That's always where it starts. And then we have to look at what are the challenges that these kind of prospects have that you can help them with, and how do they talk about it? Not how do you talk about it, but how do they talk about it?
You also have to know, how does it differ from what I can buy online right now? Mm-hmm. That is a new parameter that didn't exist 15 years ago.
Well, if you're talking to them about a challenge, first we got to get their attention. So you've got to talk to them about a challenge that they have that's going to resonate with them. And so most people like to talk about what they do. And nobody cares what you do. They care how they're going to be better off after you finish doing whatever it is you do. So the first thing we have to do is define the problem, because that's what gets their attention. We want them to say, yes, I have that same problem. And I'll give you an example. I work with a lot of people in commercial real estate, and they like to talk about what they do. They find space, and they work with the tenants so that they can find commercial space, and they negotiate with the landlords and the tenant can find commercial space. That's what they like to talk
about. And it's all the same.
Every single one of them. So I was working with a young broker that was in the DC area that worked with a lot of defense contractors. When defense contractors get a new contract, they have to go out and hire a whole bunch of people. And so I kept pushing him and pushing him, and I finally said to him, okay, so you've got a defense contractor. They got the new contract. They're really happy. They pop the champagne. After they finish partying and celebrating, what's the next thing they say to themselves? And he said, holy crap, where are we going to put all these people? Holy crap, where are we going to put all these people? We have just defined the problem. So now we can talk about that in an intelligent manner. And so that's where it starts, is what's the target, and then we have to define what the problem is.
So if I were going to call one of those people and qualify them, I would simply ask the question, have you got to the holy crap part yet?
Well, you could do it that way.
Because the guy would say, what do you mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The guy would say, what do you mean by that? I would say, it's a chair problem. What do you mean chair? Well, they're all going to need chairs. And we provide space so that you can put the chair. And we design it and. But the bottom line is, have you got to the holy crap part yet? Is an engaging question that they are compelled to answer because no one's ever asked them that before.
That's probably true. That's not what I advised him to do, but that's probably true.
What do you advise them to do?
His value proposition became about helping defense contractors that got new contracts gear up quickly. And he actually had a very compelling story to tell, which was about a tenant in a defense contractor that was a client of theirs. They got the contract. They actually found them space in the same building in 3 months, which is very fast in the commercial real estate world. And so he was able to tell this story quickly. We edited it down. And so he had a very compelling story to tell about his expertise in their world, solving their problem. He started getting a lot of appointments. And the thing that I always find to be so interesting, and that each of my clients or each salesperson out there in the world, they have unique stories to tell, because they're the only ones that have those clients or those customers. And so that's a differentiator when you're able to talk about how you've been able to help someone to someone that has the same problem and speak in their own language.
It's so interesting to see how that world has changed and still remained the same. The sales guy always has the cold call. And when Wendy is talking about describe your ideal customer, I think that I would also add, let's look at our present customers and talk to them about who they are, who decided, how that decision was made, and how the product is being used, so that you don't have to go in the dark. You can go in the light and talk about, yes, I want to know who my ideal customer is, because maybe some of the customers I have right now are not my ideal customers and I want better ones. But the bottom line is, I've made sales, And I want to try to find out how those sales were made, who decided, and how much they bought.
For sure. And it struck a chord with me when she said that a lot of salespeople that she works with are unable to or have not yet identified their ideal prospect. Like, this isn't about cold calling. This is about selling 101. You know, you don't just need an idea to know who your ideal prospect is in order to make a cold call. You need to know who your ideal prospect is to sell. I mean, how are you reaching out to people on LinkedIn? How are you networking? Like, if you don't know that, diehard, you're in trouble.
I think you can find your ideal prospect in any line at Starbucks in New York City on any given morning. There's enough people in there where you can just walk down the line and go, do you buy this? Do you buy this? Do you buy this? Do you buy that? And just have fun with them.
Yeah.
I think there's an ability for anybody to begin to prospect in today's world because there are so many people that are waiting online for something, whether it's at an airport or a coffee shop or a cashier. I think there's things you can learn from them.
Interesting, too, that she brought up the research from the Rain Group. We had Mike Schultz.
I was just thinking about that. Yeah. So, you guys, diehards, if you haven't heard the Mike Schultz interview.
He's good.
He's really good. Yeah. Go back and go to Sell or Die on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast and just search for it. He's real good.
Yeah. You can even rate it 5 stars before you even listen.
Wow.
And that whole conversation was interesting, too, because there is a battle going on right now between online commerce and sort of one-on-one, the personal experience. And in Wendy's view, that personal and in the Rain Group's view, that personal one-on-one experience still does resonate with buyers.
So,
but I'm going to find my buyer more easily online now than ever before. I can go to LinkedIn. I can go to Instagram stories. There are places that I can go where I can find people that 10 years ago were impossible to find.
I'm only hiring people through Instagram stories from now on. Like, I want to know like who you really are before I hire you, and I will know everything from your Instagram story, especially if you don't have one.
Oh, my God. I watch some of those stories, and I have to tell you, some of them are pretty inane.
You want to do a story right now?
No, I don't.
But going back to what Wendy was saying, essentially that, I mean, she's sort of foretelling maybe the end of the personal commodity sale. And so maybe commodity sales could be in a little trouble. But there are other places where you, even if you're communicating online, you can be personal. And this is really interesting because our guest coming up on Thursday is Jean Ginsberg.
Oh, yeah.
And she talks all about how to personalize while automating digital marketing. So this is all tied in together.
So, like, I think about things I buy. Maybe you can think about some things you buy.
I can't think, Jen, about things I buy. Your list is way too long.
Very funny. Actually, I think your list is longer than mine.
All right, go ahead.
Anyway, there are some things I buy, like, that I, you know, whatever. Like, I'll buy it online because I don't care. Like, plastic bags or garbage bags.
Or face mask crap.
No, I buy those in Paris. But but there are some things that I routinely order through Amazon that I don't care to talk to anyone about, okay?
Right. Yeah.
But like if I'm in New York, I'm going to Deborah Koningsberger's clothing store, Noir et Blanc, on 25th between 5th and 6th, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm shopping with Deborah because I want the experience of Deborah telling me what looks good and what doesn't look good.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get that online, okay? No one online is saying, hey, I think that'll look really good on you because this other outfit looked really good on you.
Okay, wait a second. Don't you use that service where you get clothes?
Yeah, I have Rent the Runway,
uh-huh.
But that's different.
What's different about it?
You Rent the Runway, I don't keep. Rent the Runway, they send me clothing, I wear it, I send it back.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Well, I keep it if it fits and it looks
now
great.
Now you're talking.
Okay, but that's a whole different buying experience.
The bottom line is the internet has invaded the sales process. And it has changed the sales process, in my opinion, for the better. And it ferrets out the real people. You can get to the real decision maker if you're astute enough to find that person. I think you have to be very well versed in LinkedIn, which is where you're going to find most of the bigger decision makers. Although sometimes the big guys are not even on LinkedIn, so you have to sort of go up through the ranks and find out how high up you can go. But the bottom line is that the sophistication of the process has made it more easy, the sophistication of the process has made it easier to find who I need to deal with.
Yes, I don't disagree with you.
Well, thank you.
Yes, and if you want to be an ultra high performer and you compete with online, then the key is to create that experience. Because if you think about it, that's why I go shop at Deborah's store.
I understand that.
So if you're looking to be the top of the top salesperson and you're competing with online, your main differentiator is that experience that you're creating for your customers.
And don't you have to have an answer if you're cold calling or not? Don't you have to have an answer as a salesperson to the question of, well, why shouldn't I just buy this online?
Yeah.
If you don't have that answer ready to go, then you're probably in trouble.
Oh, no, you definitely are in trouble. You have to – if you get to a decision maker, you better be able to wax eloquent or you're going to lose. And I don't want to describe to that decision maker what I have. Rather, I want to ask him or her what's happening in their world. What's their productivity barrier? What are their profitability barriers? So that I can really get deep.
But this is interesting. I have found that a lot of people who do cold calling are always hoping to get to that decision maker. Like,
yep.
That's the goal. I want to get to the decision maker.
Yep.
And then they get to the decision maker and they're like, they don't know what to say because they didn't expect to get to the decision maker.
Here's what they say. Could I have 5 minutes of your time? Is Thursday or Friday better for you? I'm going to be in your neighborhood. Yeah, exactly. They're trying to – once they get the person on the phone, they don't know how to engage. They try to make an appointment. They try to make a sale rather than excite the person about who they are and what they do.
So the key is if you're going to be making cold calls, be ready and assume you are going to get the decision maker so you know what you're going to say when you get there.
And at the point you get the decision maker, the script is non-existent. You have to rely on your capability. Maybe you have a question and the question is repeatable. Maybe you have a one-sentence a factoid and that is repeatable. But other than that, you're on your own.
So, yeah, I agree with you. Okay, so this was pretty cool. Diehards, we want to know in our Facebook group what you thought of this style episode, like where we take an older interview, talk about it, and then talk to that same person 10 years later. We have a bunch of older interviews, so we want to know if you want more. Tell us in the Seller Diehard official Facebook group.
It talks about the evolution of sales, and I think as a salesperson, if you're a diehard, that's great. But you could be an uber diehard by understanding what happened, why it happened, how it has evolved, how it has changed, and how to take advantage of that change.
All right. So we always read a 5-star review.
We
were so excited to get into Wendy Weiss's interview that we didn't actually read it at the beginning.
Oh.
But Flipping Rookie.
Flipping Rookie?
Yeah. Wrote us this review. He or she wrote, "Wonderful podcast, full of powerful knowledge. I'm on the road many hours a week, and I'm able to train myself with the help of your podcast. I've shared this with my sales team. Keep up the great work." How cool is that?
Very nice.
I freaking love it. I love it.
And you know, take us on the road.
Yeah, we're there.
Download it, 5-star it, and listen to it.
All right, until next time.
Wait a minute.
What?
What do you mean next time?
Aren't we going? You want to stay? I mean, I want to stay all day, but we've got sales to make.
I'm just going to challenge salespeople that we talked today about prospecting, and prospecting is the thing that's going to fill your pipeline. And if you're not consistently prospecting, you're going to have an empty one, or you're going to rely on that one sales call, that one prospective customer, and they're never going to come through at the end of the month for you to, quote, make your number. It's not about cold calling. It's about making certain that you have prospected your pipeline to full. Once you do that, you will go from diehard to uber diehard. And now we can say goodbye, Jen. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling. I'm on tour. You can find me in all kinds of cities all over the United States. Just go to cgittimer.com and you'll see what's going on. And Jennifer, who is launching her book on January 1st, Sales in a New York Minute, is going to give you a spiel about why you should buy it right now online.
You probably already heard the ad, but in case you missed it, it's going to be an amazing sales book, and I want every salesperson to get this into their hands. So please order Sales in a New York Minute on Amazon. Pre-order.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of Truthful Living by Napoleon Hill, and
I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute.
And I am just challenging you. Thank you for being our customer. Get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.
Sell or diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.